Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. I am your host, Jason Hobbs, and I am very pleased to be back on the mics. Like I had said last episode, it had been almost 6 weeks since I talked to y'all, and that was way too long. So I got another great guest that I've been strong-arming him now since GaryCon, and I have Dr. Greg Gillespie. How you doing, Greg?
Good, and yes, I have been strong-armed. There's no doubt about that.
It's almost like we were at a con and I was trying to convince you to run a game for us.
Almost like that, yes.
All right, so I should give you a better introduction for those who don't know you. So Greg Gillespie is known, to me, the best, I guess, for the various incarnations of Barrowmaze, the latest being Barrowmaze Complete, and then more recently, the Forbidden Caverns of Archaea, and then another successful Mega Dungeon Kickstarter, Highfell. You also won a Three Castles Award for the Forbidden Caverns of Archaea, right?
Yeah, super exciting and very, very lucky, very fortunate.
We talked kind of at length about the Three Castles Awards a few different times because of my own issues with it last year and how much better it got this year. But just in general, what it was, and you had your own things that you like that you had, you know, involved with that particular award. Do you want to talk about that at all, or anything else?
Yeah, sure. Well, the thing is, I like the way it started. So, like, I think Doug and Mike had a lot of vision for the North Texas Con when they started it, and also with the Three Castles Award and with Rob Kuntz being involved in it right from the get-go. I think that lends itself some credibility that other awards don't have. I like the way, again, that particular award is set up. I like that it's firmly rooted right in the old school community. And these are the people who are writing the games and playing the games and are sort of the, you know, the people that go to cons are basically sort of the influencers, right? If we were to consider a con like YouTube, and the people that go to the cons are the influencers, the people who are really enthusiastic and geared up about playing and designing games. And then they go out and they go back home and then they play with their groups and those groups play with other groups and so on. It trickles down. So I really like what they've done with North Texas, and it's definitely something I want to patronize. I want to go, I want to, you know, I'll submit Highfell when it's ready in 2020. And, is something I definitely have tried to support whenever they've asked me to contribute.
Yeah, I think that the con was very good. It seemed like there might have been a drop-off in numbers to me. It seemed like there were less than there were the year before, but you weren't there the year before, were you? Or were you? I can't remember.
I was there, I think, 3 years before, and then 2013 was the first time I went. So, and I think that the other venue was, I don't know whether it was smaller and there were more people or this venue was bigger and there were less, but it definitely seemed like there was a little bit of a drop off from what I had experienced in previous years. But that may be a function, like whenever you move a venue, that can give you, you need a year or two to get your feet back under yourself, I think.
I was at the venue, I went last year and the year prior, so I felt, I saw the change, and then it just seemed like there was, but it might have been more of my own cronies were there or something, and since there were less, it was different. But
your entourage, you mean?
Oh, I don't have an entourage. I'm part of their entourage, probably. I don't know. All right, so what did you think comparing those two cons, like GaryCon and North Texas? What do you have thoughts on that, or what do you think?
Both are really good. You know, GaryCon has evolved. You know, with WotC there and. Seems like there's a lot more miniatures and board game action going on there. I think it's a little bit more diverse, whereas North Texas is still really strong in terms of the like old school RPG portion of it. And so I think, you know, that likely explains the differences in the two cons as I've experienced them. I've been to GaryCon twice now and North Texas three times.
So now all we have to do is get you to Game Hole. What do we got to do to get Dr. Greg Gillespie to the Game Hole Con? That's my question.
Somebody's got to pick me up at the airport. That's really, if that happens, I'll come.
Well, I bet I could get you a ride. I've picked people up at the airport before in Milwaukee, so I've done that. So
Yeah. I'm like, that's the other thing. I'm not like, I would probably would have to go, I'd fly from Buffalo to, I don't know if Buffalo goes to Milwaukee or not, but probably Buffalo, Chicago, and then Chicago, Milwaukee or something along that line.
Yeah, we can make that happen. You know, I'm only about an hour and a half from Chicago. You just got to go when I go. That's all.
All right.
So let's make that happen.
Yeah, I'll strong arm you.
You probably will too. The first time I met you, I feel like you were a lot heavier than you are now. Did you lose a lot of weight? I don't think I've ever talked to you about this in person, but it's something that occurred to me recently. And you're a long ways away, so if you got mad, you couldn't really do anything about it.
Yeah. I mean, I've been resistance training and doing that sort of thing for about 7 months straight now, and I definitely lost weight. There's no doubt about it. And so I'm. It's just something that in the academic cycle, I knew I had a sabbatical coming up in the 2018-2019 academic year. And so I wanted to get a little bit of a head start on it. I've got a whole bunch of sort of like personal growth things that I wanted to do. So, for example, I wanted to get back to working out. I played football at university, so it's something that I've always been around. And after sort of getting through marriage and getting children to, you know, far enough along, you get your schedule opens up and you can find time to do that sort of thing, eating better. And then I also took the Canadian firearms safety course, which is run by the RCMP here, and we have a lot stricter gun control law. So it's really a big ordeal. It's a big process to be able to have a gun license and own a restricted firearm. So I've done that and getting ready to apply for my gun license, which is something I've been wanting to do for a long time. My dad was in the British military before he came to Canada. Then I also want to try Tai Chi. So, yeah, something I just think it's like a really cool looking physical activity that you can do throughout your lifespan.
And I think it would probably extend that lifespan, just moving your body a lot and continually, right?
Yeah.
That's my opinion anyway, for sure.
Yeah. So those are just like some side projects to find, you know, continue at that work-life balance and grow.
Yeah, that is great. That's one of the reasons I always like talking to you. And felt very fortunate after meeting you is because you have a lot of interesting things to say, and a lot of them kind of go along with a lot of my own belief systems concerning health and the longevity of it and the ways to get there. So that's pretty cool stuff. So I often talk about how we know each other, and I think I've pretty much beat this horse to a death already. Obviously, we hang out at cons because you're in Toronto. Is that right?
I'm just outside of Niagara Falls, Ontario, which I'm basically, if you know the geography of the Great Lakes, I'm 20 minutes west of the border with Western New York. So I can be over in Niagara Falls, New York in about 20 minutes, 25 minutes or so. The border is clean.
Clean? What does that mean?
Well, it means that it's not lined up with people driving from Toronto to cross-border shop in Western New York.
All right. I didn't know if it meant like the there was some kind of sting going down.
No. I mean, you know, border media, I think that a lot of people in the U.S. get is almost always related to the Mexican border, the Canadian border. I mean, we have to remember as Canadians and Americans that we share like the longest undefended border in the history of the world. I mean, we're really, really fortunate to be neighbors. And I think a lot of times, you know, so much media gets pumped down towards what's going on in Mexico that people forget how awesome the relationship is between Canada and the United States.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I got some Canadian friends.
You're looking at them.
Yeah, that was a bad joke. All right. So, so I said that you were a doctor earlier and you shared a really cool article with me, the Brock. I wasn't even sure what it was, but it's the actual university that you are a professor for, right? So if you want to tell the listeners, honestly, this would be a great everything about you, maybe. I don't know. You think about that. Go ahead. If you want to talk about it now, or you can save it if you want. What do you think? Is it something to save, or do you want to talk about the Brock?
Like my university or?
Yeah, your university and the story you told me about what it's named after.
Oh, okay. So Brock University is located in St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada, 15 minutes away from Niagara Falls. And the university is named after General Isaac Brock, who was a British general in the Anglo-American War of 1812. And he died at a key battle. And so the university is named after him. And that's important for us Canadians to remind our American friends that that's the first war you lost, not the Vietnam was not the first war, rather it was the War of 1812. We're still here. We weren't annexed. We're still here, so we won.
I wondered if you were going to get to that part.
That's just a little bit of friendly chiding to my good American friends and family. So I've got family through Massachusetts.
All right. Nice. Awesome. All right. So the weekly gaming briefly. I'll start is where I usually talk about like the games I've played since the last episode. Honestly, all I've played was last night. I played Operation White Box Twilight 2000 with Thaddeus Moore, who I really think we should all just start calling Patches. I think that's his new nickname. Do you remember Thaddeus at all, Greg? He played in your GaryCon game of Forbidden Caverns of Archaea.
Yeah, I remember.
He was at the table with me and Tim DeShane.
Yeah.
That game is kind of crazy because we're using Operation White Box rules pretty much in the Twilight 2000 setting. So are you familiar with that at all or no?
No, I've got enough time for, like, I'm a purist, so it's right into old school medieval fantasy, and that's what I've got the time for. I don't really have time for anything else. That and a few board games, that's about it.
Nice. For those who don't know, Twilight 2000 is a game that came out in the late 80s about World War III that took place in Europe, mostly around Poland in the year 2000. That's why it's called Twilight 2000. So it's a pretty interesting game. And obviously the setting is pretty funny in the way Thaddeus runs it. He is from Kentucky. And right now the group that we have ended up with, our little band of misfits, is the Kentucky National Guard, battalion of the Kentucky National Guard, which the main guy has kind of set up his own little warlord type zone, and we're trying to decide if we want to fit in with them or if we don't. And you know, we're using M16s and driving around in a BTR, and I don't know, it's just pretty interesting. We've only done a couple sessions, and we've actually added a couple new players, actually two more military guys, Eric Hoffman and Matt Jackson. So it's almost all military guys except me. So they go off on all these tangents about what types of weapons and ammo, and I know nothing about it. So Paul Wolf is pretty fun. He was a tank driver in Saudi, so that's his deal. But anyway, I played. Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun group. And I also wanted to say I teased that I recorded a podcast on Sunday, but it wasn't Hobbs and Friends with the OSR. It might have been with a couple very common guests on Hobbs and Friends with the OSR in our own new podcast, which hopefully will drop Thursday. Which for you, Greg, means absolutely nothing. But for the listeners, they'll be like, oh, I think I know what that is. So what about you? What have you been doing gaming-wise lately?
Mostly designing. So I spend a lot of my extra time working through, trying to think through the process of taking the Kickstarter funding for Highfell and making it the most awesome adventure I can. So that involves, I've been spending a lot of time, for those of you that don't know, I'm a big miniature painter and also terrain. So what I try to do is when I'm thinking of dungeons, particularly with Archaea and with Highfell, I'm trying to think of the people who have like Dwarvenforge terrain and that sort of thing. And I'm trying to think through creating dungeons that, if people study the maps, they'll be able to rebuild with their Dwarvenforge stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. So that's why you said you would want to play a game online like Matt's, because you really dig the actual miniatures and terrain and such.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes if we're feeling if I'm feeling super lazy, I'm not going to bother busting out terrain and stuff, or if I'm just running behind. But normally, if we can, we bust it out and people enjoy it. It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to play in that. I wouldn't want to carry that stuff around and have to set it up. I mean, how come you don't bring that to the cons? You know, you're only flying a few hours, aren't you?
Yeah, with a tiny bag and everything else. No, but I'm centrally located from a gaming group. There are people that live 20 minutes in one direction, and there are people that live 20 minutes the other direction. So I'm sort of central, and I've got a big dining room table and a big empty house. So we're pretty well set when we come here to play.
All right, that's fantastic. So now it's time for everyone's favorite Ugly Kid Joe themed segment, Everything About You. I'm not going to talk too much about it. I told you ahead of time. It's say something about yourself that the listeners don't know, which you have already dropped a ton of stuff. So this, I'm going to be a little serious this time and say, I would like to have, I want Hobbs and Friends of the OSR to be a place where people can come and listen about gaming and not about politics or anything else. And so I'm going to have different types of people on the show, and you're not always going to agree with their politics, but I should say I don't endorse the beliefs of my guests in any way, unless I say that I do. Like I already said, I endorsed Greg's, you know, being healthy, but in general, I don't. So don't believe that and don't read that in, and don't believe that I'm not guilty by association for guests that you do have the same beliefs in or guests that you don't have the same beliefs in. I have my own set of beliefs and so do they, but this is really a show about gaming. All right. So what about you, Greg? You got anything for the listeners?
Why? What do you want me to speak to specifically? Like
anything, man. It can be hot. When you said you played, well, why don't you talk about why are you always in college football shirts or college sports shirts when you go to cons?
That's a good question. It's a simple one. I'm a big guy, so I feel the humidity. And so I try to find clothing that is really light. And someone introduced me to Pima cotton about a year ago. And I thought, yeah, that's for me. And so I pretty much wear shirts that allow my body to breathe a little bit better. That's not a very exciting story.
The picture behind me would
probably be a little bit more interesting. So if you're listening or you can't see it, it's a picture of a famous piper from the Battle of Waterloo. So I'm a piper. For those of you who don't know, I play the big, obnoxious, loud Highland bagpipe. And then I also play a smaller version that you play sitting down. And I can also play some tin whistle by ear. So anyway, this photograph appeals to me for that reason. So it's got this Piper Mackay at Waterloo. So at the time, the defensive strategy when you're charged by cavalry was to form a square. And that way you could better withstand cavalry. So they form this, the Scots Guards form this square, and it starts breaking down, and the men are losing their will, at which time Piper Mackay, who's standing in the center of the square with the colors and the officers, steps outside the square where he could easily be trampled by horse and starts playing to inspire the troops. And as a result, they managed to hold their formation and didn't fall to French guns. So that's, I have a lot of sort of inspirational pieces around my house, and that's a key moment where a piper inspired his troops at the Battle of Waterloo.
So you're saying you're a Bard fan?
I've never actually seen stats written up for the pipe, but I wouldn't object to it, put it that way.
Yeah, in conversation was just the first time that I found out that there are different types of bagpipes, because I did not know that. Awesome. Yeah, that's fantastic.
So, it's something that being involved in athletics and being really active and stuff in my youth, I really didn't think I had a musical bone in my body. I just thought, you know, some of us are blessed in certain ways and not in others. But I was really selling myself short. So once I realized that football was coming to an end, I said, you know what, I can't go through my life. There's only one really instrument that's calling to me. And so I decided to pick it up, and I was like a duck in water, couldn't read music or anything. And I picked it up right away and just stuck it out. And I don't get to play very often anymore, but when I do, the whole neighborhood knows about it.
I'm sure. So when you say football in Canada, is that actual like American football or Canadian football or soccer or what?
Yeah, no, it's so it would be the equivalent of like CFL rules. So wider, longer field, 12 players, lots of pre-snap motion, that sort of thing. So the interesting part, though, is that, you know, for a lot of people who are CFL fans say, oh, yeah, it's a passing league. And it's because of that reason, it's a lot better than the National Football League. But what these people don't know is the CFL stole the forward pass from American football. And it's just big hypocrisy, really. So I try to remind my Canadian friends that, you know, when they start talking up the CFL, because I prefer the National Football League myself. I'm going to watch football.
Some of these conversations are coming back to me now. We have talked about so many things. All right. Awesome. Okay. So the main topic is, I think in the OSR, people talk about mega dungeons. But as far as I know, that's your only writing credits, right? It's all you've written is mega dungeons. Is that accurate? Or
yeah, pretty much. I did a small one page dungeon before that when they were doing the one page dungeon contests many years ago, maybe like 2011 or 2012. And then so then I started thinking of my players would we talk and they'd be like, okay, well, we want to do this. On our gaming night, and then we'd showed up on gaming night, and I'd prepare to do that, and then they'd switch and want to do something else, and I was getting a bit frustrated. So then I decided, okay, well, I need like a tent pole to make this campaign happen, to bring some consistency to it. So I sort of just took the geographical area we're working with, put in a couple places if they want to do other stuff, but the loot was so good in the first place that they kept going back, and that became Barrow Maze over time.
Yeah. So Barrow Maze is obviously it was also a nominee for the Three Castles Award, right?
Yeah. It finished second by a nose to Jeff D's Caveman RPG in 2013.
Yeah. Does anyone ever play that anymore?
So, I'll just shrug my shoulders.
What do you think? What were the design aspects of Barrow Maze that made it a nominee, as the Three Castles Award is a design award? Any thoughts? Or
well, the thing is, you know, there are a number of, if you've followed or been in the hobby for long enough, as I'm sure some of your listeners have been, if you think back through some of the more popular mega dungeons, they weren't really all that good. Like, if you think of the world's largest mega dungeon, I mean, it's just maps and tables, really, and not that awesome. Undermountain. I always thought that the modules made for Undermountain were way better than Undermountain. And again, just lots of big maps and not a lot going on. And I thought, you know, why doesn't a mega dungeon have a theme? Like, you know, there are a lot of like funhouse type mega dungeons made by different people. And I thought, you know, there's no reason why you can't do different things and still have one theme that's sort of running through it. So that's how I started to think about Barrow Maze. And that then led itself to, okay, well, I want to make sure there have to be multiple entrances. I want to make sure that we're thinking in terms of making it very difficult to get in and very difficult to get out with treasure. I mean, oftentimes those things are made really easy for players. Mm-hmm. And my question was why? I mean, why is it easy? I mean, it doesn't have to be easy. Like, to me, the most rewarding things are when you're presented with challenges, and as a group, you have to actually think through and come up with alternatives. I remember when we first played Barrow Maze, and Jason Schultes was Skyping in to the game, and the whole party, they went into the main barrow mound and went down the block and tackle rope into the dungeon, and he stayed at the top and he refused to go down. And he's like, there's no way I'm going down there. That's just, yeah. And he wasn't wrong. But the point being that it's just funny to see how people play with those situations. And I've been very interested to read over the years how other people, when they're confronted with those challenges, have come up with alternatives that I didn't even think about that are really interesting and super awesome, and good on them for finding alternative ways of thinking through those situations.
Yeah. How rewarding is that when I think of just recently when we were at North Texas and we were celebrating, you know, the Three Castle Award winning for Forbidden Caverns. And just a few people came and we were drinking at the bar. I wasn't, but other people were. And Brenda Wolf just started telling you about her character and her experiences in the Barrow Maze. Like, I mean, is that rewarding, or do you get sick of it, or what do you think?
Actually, when people tell me that Barrow Maze was their first RPG experience, Like, that's scary to me. I'm sure it was scary for them, but it was definitely scary for me because I'm like, wow, like I think about my first experiences in role playing. And, you know, for most of us, those are fairly profound because it's such an interesting alternative way of gaming and thinking about situations and collaborating with people and how important that was in my gaming development and my academic development and my intellectual development. So, you know, when I think that, wow, like this person's first introduction to role-playing games was playing Barrow Maze, it floors me. And I just, I hope that it is as rewarding for them as playing some of the old TSR modules was for me.
Oh, nice. So the reason you decided to do the Mega Dungeon is you wanted to fix it, it sounds like, right? You kind of thought that maybe there was an aspect of it that was broken and you wanted to give it basically an underlying theme that tied it all together for a single campaign almost. Is that accurate or?
Yeah. And I think, you know, like, oh, everyone gets caught up. You know, sometimes we get tunnel vision in our gaming communities, and we've had tunnel vision with Mega Dungeons. So we've got the traditional, you know, layered dungeon that each level corresponds roughly to character level, monster hit dice. And I say bollocks to that. I mean,
bollocks.
who says that we have to do that? Okay, fine. So, you know, Castle Greyhawk and Blackmoor may have used that approach. And that's fantastic. It's central to gaming. But it doesn't have to be the only way to go about it. So when I was thinking of Barrow Maze, I was thinking of, instead of a dungeon crawl, I was thinking of a dungeon sprawl. So if we take the notion that it's largely one level, and it's only through exploration that you're going to perhaps wander into the level 2 area or wander into the level 3 area. And what are you going to do in those instances, right? So that's how what I'm trying to do is present the Mega Dungeon in different ways. So in that, so you've got the example for Barrow Maze. If you take Forbidden Caverns, so you're actually descending into the canyon at the bottom. And then by working your way across the map and up, it has the reverse perspective of starting on first level and going to second and going to third and going to fourth. So it's just taking it and flipping it around, and also presenting opportunities to, you know, so the, I think signposting in RPGs can be really boring. I think there's a lot of ways to let people explore and do things without saying, hey, over here is the level 3 area, or this is the stairway to the level 4 area, or whatever. I think a veteran gamer isn't really looking for that experience anymore. At least I don't
think so. I was like, I'm hoping you're going to explain signposting because I'm not sure what you're talking about. Fortunately.
Yeah, it's like I'm going to. Yeah, having a big neon sign, saying,
right? The Acme sign or whatever.
Down to level 2.
So what was the I know that you wanted to flip it when we talk about Forbidden Caverns, but what did you have, like a real world sort of inspiration for, like the buttes or whatever that you're kind of going up into when you do inside the canyon, or where did you come up with that idea?
Well, the real basic starting point is the Caves of Chaos. So I think that you know, most of us have played the Caves of Chaos either in whole or in part, perhaps multiple times. And I just think that, in the early days of the hobby, Caves of Chaos was perfect at its time for that style of gaming. But we've all had decades of experience now. Our expectations are higher. And I think that there was room to take that idea and make it grander, make it much cooler. And at the same time, try to still keep the charm that we'll always associate with the Caves of Chaos adventure. So if I did anything like that, I'd consider it successful.
So when you're talking about that, are you also referring to maybe the factions and the way you have the factions interacting in Forbidden Caverns, or the geography, or anything else? I mean,
well, I think that what I try to do in each instance is look at it as an ecosystem. And so, like, if we, and I always like the notion with Tolkien's orcs that they inherently didn't get along. You know, it's only if they had a strong-armed leader who would smack them upside the head that would keep them in line at spear point. And if that didn't exist, they sort of devolved to chaos and wouldn't really be a coherent fighting unit. And I think that comes out a little bit in the DM guide, if you're looking for it. It doesn't necessarily come out in the individual monster entries, although it does in a couple in the monster manual. But I think that notion needed to be expanded. So what I did was I was looking at one of the tables in the DMG, and it made it pretty clear that, you know, lizard men are universally disliked. And then I was thinking of, okay, well, I want to have cavemen for sure in this adventure just because I think cavemen are cool. and it had dinosaurs. And I mean, if you're going to have cavemen, you got to have dinosaurs. So then I was thinking, well, how would the Neanderthal fit in a army of monstrous humanoids? And they'd probably be in the same place that lizard men would be. And then I wanted that to evolve. So I give players a starting point, but through interaction, depending what the players do, or if they set one tribe against the other, or whatever, you could go from friendly to neutral to enemy across a span of time. And I think that if we sit in that context, because they're basically in the middle of a desert and it's hard to cross the desert, resources in the canyon are going to be prime. So they are going to be squabbling for food. They are going to be squabbling for slaves. They are going to be squabbling for gold or whatever other resources there are. And that creates a real dynamic environment, I think.
Yeah, I really enjoy that. I would guess that's probably one of the main aspects of Forbidden Caverns when you talk about a design perspective that was new and probably helped with the Three Castles Award, I would say. I think. I mean, I don't know. That's just my opinion. The judges didn't say anything to me or anything, but that's pretty awesome. So I read during the Highfell Kickstarter that you're so far the three mega dungeons you have may be related in some way. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah, sure. So if anybody's like really, really old in the gaming community, this precedes me, actually. So a lot of things I do. I think that you can, in communities, you can create new, interesting things. But I was trained as a cultural historian, so I have a particular esteem for things about the past and acknowledging people who came before us, and also being mindful of revisionism. So my thought was always, how can I do what I do while also tipping my cap to people like Gygax and Arneson and Kuntz and Perrin and the rest of them? And so it's my understanding that they use the outdoor survival board as their sort of one of their wilderness maps on which Castle Greyhawk was set. So I thought that's really cool, right? And when you bust out the map, it's really awesome. So what I'm doing with each of the books is I'm filling in a sixth of that map for fun. And it's also the map that serves as my campaign for my home game. So Barrow Maze was the bottom left-hand corner. Archaea was to the right of that, or to the east. And Highfell will be in the section that's north of Barrow Maze in the top northwestern corner of the map.
Awesome. So after Highfell, we have three more mega dungeons to expect from Dr. Gillespie. Awesome.
Well, I don't know if I'll make it, but I'm going to try.
Yeah, I mean, you're right now, I think you're ahead of George R. R. Martin with your writing speed, but I don't know. I think you'll make it. All right. So, Well, we're running out of time as always, but you want to take a couple minutes and talk about Highfell specifically and tell people kind of what it is, or any teasers that you want for the people who didn't get in on the Kickstarter, why they want to throw their money at it as soon as they can.
Sure. So if you're familiar with Barrow Maze or Forbidden Caverns, there's a particular layout in there in terms of a gazetteer that's fleshed out with interesting tidbits in there, and then how to run the dungeon and all that stuff. And so all the stuff I write is ready for play. If you can tweak it and switch out monsters or do whatever you like if you want to. If you don't want to, it's all there for you. It's minimal prep. I know we weary DMs, sometimes we're behind with our game prep, and that's one of the reasons Bear Maze and Forbidden Caverns and Highfell are in a response to mega dungeons like Undermountain and the World's Largest Dungeon, because those weren't ready to play and out of the box. And I want things that are ready to play with all the detail. I love layers of detail. And those people who read my stuff and often comment at cons say they just love the detail. Like, I'm going to finesse all the little tiny details to make sure they aren't repetitive. I don't want to break the game frame by having any homogeneity or repetitiveness. At least I try not to anyway. So with Highfell, it's very much inspired by things like Cloud City from Star Wars, the Age of Ultron film, Game of Thrones, and we know, of course, some of the great adventures that are out there. Things like the Desert of Desolation from the Dragonlance with the great Parkinson cover. That was definitely an inspiration for Highfell. And there have been some other great Wizard Tower type dungeons, because Wizard Towers are featured fairly significantly. So in the above ground portion, and some of those come from third edition too, which are really cool modules. So this is the preliminary map.
Wow, the nice. X-Map.
So the Principality of Brine will be the new sort of area, and we've got some edits, as you can see there on the way. We're working on that, and the next thing up will be the town map, and so I send the detail to Dave Needham, and he's been very gracious, and he's been with me right along the way. So when all the hex maps between the books are going to look the same, in terms of the aesthetic, I should say, and then the same with the town maps and whatnot. So what you're familiar with is what you're going to continue to see, and I'm gonna keep going until I use up all the tavern names and the I've used up the random harlot table for all my tavern names.
Awesome. All right, man. So this was fantastic. You did great. And I want to do some appreciation for my patrons. So I always get a call out to three patrons. So this episode, we got Sean P. Kelly, Craig, not just Craig Stokes, and Eric Sawsweedle. You guys, without you guys, I wouldn't be able to do it. And without you guys, I'm sure this wouldn't be in any nominated podcast. So really, I don't do anything except talk to people at cons and during the show, as far as the show goes. So if it wasn't for you guys and the great guests that I have and the editor, Chris Sneezak, the show wouldn't be anything. So if anyone wanted to contact you and talk about how high your Highfell is, Greg, how would they contact you?
You can get me at barrelmazecomplete@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook. There's the Barrel Maze Facebook group and Google+. I mean, whatever works, I'm there. If you don't see my name, look for Kilted Yaxman, and that's me.
Yeah, he is a very approachable guy. He hasn't punched me yet, and so don't worry about it. If you want to contact me, I am on the Twitters at Hobbs Indeed. The show has its own Twitter feed at OSRN Hobbs. Or if you want to be a patron and get a sweet shout out and help support the show, www.patreon.com/OSRN Hobbs. And all, as always, on the Googles, G+ community, Hobbs and Friends of the OSR, 654 people strong now. So you need to be more active over there, Greg. You got to pick up some of these people. I'm pretty sure, there's a lot of OSR adjacent people that want to use your stuff to run Dungeon World. I'm almost positive.
Yeah, well, everyone should listen to Hobbs and Friends. It's an amazing show, and you're doing a fantastic job. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much, man. I was going to ask if you had any last words, but those seem pretty great. I have to do these. Hobbs and Friends of the OSR is part of the Misdirected Mark Network, the media arm of Encoded Designs. Have a good one.